Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The NFL draft comes up in a little less than 48 hours, and I can't wait. It's going to be exciting. It's as close to a live sporting event as we'll have for who knows how long, so let's treasure it. Alongside Mark Rohde, I'm Zach Zaidman. We're broadcasting from the Score Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And when it comes to the NFC North, no one knows more than NFL Network's Stacey Dales, and she joins us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. But Stacey, thank you so much for joining us. Before we get to the NFC North, I want to hit the biggest news in the NFL today, and that is the return of Gronk. What was your reaction, Stacey, when you found out that Rob Gronkowski is coming back and joining forces with Tom Brady once again?
Well, hey guys, two of my good friends, and I hope you guys are staying safe and all that good stuff. I wasn't actually, you know what, Zach, I was surprised, but I wasn't. I figured that at some point Gronk would come back. I mean, he's just too healthy. He's too built. He's too young and too good to not play the game. So when he retired, that's when I was shocked. But understanding his injury history and my reaction today is he just didn't want to be where he was and needed to get his body right. And his buddy is now in Tampa, a beautiful climate for, you know, football players. It's hot, it's sunny, it's, you know, a new opportunity. So why not? So that was kind of my reaction to it. With the addition of him, you guys, I now think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers could win the NFC South. I don't know what you think, but...
Oh, yeah. I mean, with the talented receivers that they have and now one of the best tight ends in the world. So then the obvious next question would be, who this year has more success, the Tom Brady Gronk Buccaneers or the Bill Belichick New England Patriots?
I'm going with the Tom Brady Rob Gronkowski Bucs because Bruce Arians is... to me, a perfect, he's the head coach there for your listeners that may not know that. He's the perfect match for Tom Brady. He is a veteran coach who is, you know, the proverbial player's coach, as you guys both know, but a veteran coach with a young spirit. And I think he's innovative offensively. Ben Roethlisberger was one of the recipients of his teachings. Carson Palmer in Arizona. I think it's perfect. I think Tom Brady, alongside his quarterbacks, or, well, I wouldn't even say quarterbacks coach, offensive coordinator Byron Leftwich, who was a former quarterback and a good one at that, I think he's going to have freedom with this offense. And, I mean, you mentioned the receivers, Mike Evans, Chris Goodwin, or Godwin, excuse me, and I think they'll try to build that offensive lineup. I think the Bucs are going to be so much fun. We need to figure out which reporter we're going to send there. That's how much we're going to cover them.
They're prime time now. They're going to become what the Patriots used to be in terms of the national media focus. We're joined by NFL Network Stacey Dales on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. All right, let's hit the NFC North stuff because that's your specialty, and anyone who follows you on Twitter has seen that you've been following all the different pre-draft press conferences from all the different teams in the division, including Ryan Pace's pre-draft presser today. What was your takeaway listening to Ryan Pace talk about the Bears heading into the 2020 draft?
my takeaway, Grody, you were on that call, right?
I was.
I think I heard you. Yeah, I think I heard you. I don't know what you think, but my takeaway was the Bears feel very prepared with the sort of virtual nature of what we're about to do. I think that Ryan Pace has a pretty tight-knit group with his staff. I think they're close. I think that they're a very collaborative group. One thing I've gleaned in just talking to some coaches with this roster, especially with the rehaul and, you know, after last year and the sort of letdown that we saw for their standards after the year prior. And this is a close-knit group with Ryan Pace, and he's going to count on his scouts. He's going to count on those guys that were on the road. And, you know, the other takeaway that I really gleaned from it, guys, was, listen, you got 7 picks, but he mentioned the 2 second-rounders on several occasions during the call. I think they're really looking at those to be impact picks. Possibly they move one of them to get some more picks on the back end. But so much for the Bears and for Bears fans will be hinged upon the nature of this draft early. Which players come off the board? What are the runs, meaning how many receivers do we see go? What positions do we see go in lumps and in groupings? And what are the trends with that being said? And I think then you'll see what the Bears may decide to do there with the 43rd and 50th pick. Because with only 7 picks, I mean, y'all know that it's tough to build. They only had, I think, 5 last year. And so trying to build through through the draft is a tough deal. So maybe moving one of those picks to get a couple later on in later rounds would be something. But I think it all hinges upon the early part of this draft.
Totally agree with everything you just said, Stacey. One of the things that I also got out of Ryan Pace's conference call today is that I'm more convinced than ever that they are thinking offensive line with one of those second round picks, assuming that they keep them. And here's why, because he actually said that they consider Rashad Coward a work in progress. They also said that, you know, Jermaine Ifedi is here and could very well be the other guard opposite of James Daniel, but he said, look, it's a 1-year deal, so they have to think about offensive line. Do you think that offensive line will be one of their second round picks, or are you thinking a different direction?
Honestly, I appreciate exactly what you're saying. I mean, Rashad Coward, for him to be, and he was almost so forthright, like this is a work in progress.
Yes.
I'll be interested to see his jump from last year to this year. I know they like the Ifedi addition, of course, but I mean, the offensive line was so responsible for so many problems last year. And when you lose Kyle Long, who without injuries, I don't know if you guys agree, but to me, without injuries, that guy's a future Hall of Famer. So I don't disagree with you. I think the Bears are going to have to snag one of their needs at 43 or 50. I also know they have needs at tight end. And he mentioned that this is a strong tight end group. Would somebody like Kmet be a great addition? What type of a tight end would be instrumental in Nagy's system because of how much this offense requires tight end? And yes, he talked today about the ads of Jimmy Graham and Demetrius Harris, who knows the system very well. But, you know, adding a young tight end to build, I mean, you think about the great teams in this draft or the great, you know, teams around our league. And you think about the George Kittles, you think about the Travis Kelce's, Zach Ertz's, all those teams have been to or won Super Bowls. So the tight end position to me is vastly important, and I'll be kind of anxious to see if one of those 2 picks, if they use them, is a tight end.
Our final few moments with NFL Network, Stacey Dales here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Now, for people who are not aware about you prior to your football life, you were a decorated basketball player at Oklahoma before a distinguished WNBA career. And I bring that up because prior to this NFL draft, I don't think anything has captivated us over the last month and a half from a sports standpoint like The Last Dance, the Jordan Bulls documentary from that final championship season of the dynasty in 1997-98 captivated us with episodes 1 and 2 on Sunday night. I'm sure you saw it. What did you come away with? Considering your basketball background, watching that, what was your perspective?
Oh, my gosh. There was so much to unravel. First of all, I was obsessed growing up in Canada with the Chicago Bulls. I mean, when they won six titles, I was – if they lost the game during the regular season, as a young girl in Canada, I would cry. That's how obsessed I was. I literally read the book Jordan Rules when I was, you know, in my early high school days and learned about Jerry Krause and you know, everybody associated with the team, or excuse me, Krause and Reinsdorf and everybody associated with the team. And I couldn't believe my initial reaction, guys, was that Scottie Pippen was so vastly underrated within the Bulls organization itself. Like, to me, Scottie Pippen is beyond Hall of Fame. He's one of the best to ever do it. I mean, his glass game was so incredible. Just the little things that he did, his elevation. I mean, he did a little bit of everything. And so that really exposed for me just how underrepresented he felt within the organization itself. That was kind of a sad feeling for me. And then to hear Jordan back him up, like say that's the greatest teammate I've ever had. I just got goosebumps when I heard that. I also just couldn't believe that, you know, Jordan was limited in what he was allowed to do. And I get to a degree with athletes that you have to kind of hold them back if there's major injury concerns. But I'm also, as a former athlete, knew my threshold and knew what I could play through, especially without, you know, medications. And so when they tried to hold him back, I was surprised by that. But I loved watching him, you guys, sitting there, just chilled, laid back with a scotch beside him or a bourbon beside him and, you know, giggling about, like, this is the greatest player of all time, and he's sitting there in a chair with a scotch. How cool was that?
Yeah, that I noticed that as well, and that the drink kind of changed from time to time. Sometimes it was you could tell there was a few sips taken out of it. Sometimes it was filled up. So
I loved it.
Yeah, and I also love, Stacey, the fact that you said that you cried over those Bulls losses, because I think everybody that is a sports fan can remember a time when they were a child and they cried over some sort of sporting event. I remember crying over, Zach, you'll appreciate this, DePaul losing games in the 80s when they never lost games. The 1984 Cubs made me cry. My question to you, though, Stacey, is how were you consoled when you did cry over the Bulls losing games?
When they won the next game. I mean,
there you go.
I couldn't. I remember when I was recruited by the University of Oklahoma, and this is going to sound crazy. I was 17 years old, and or actually 16. And I went to Oklahoma when I was 17. When I took my visit to Oklahoma, it was my fifth and final visit. They flew me through O'Hare here in Chicago. And as you can imagine, back then in like 1996 or 7, whatever it was, I had like an 8-hour layover in O'Hare, but I thought it was an omen because that was the home of Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls. And so I got off that airplane and I thought, wow, when I flew in, I looked down at the city and I thought, Michael Jordan's down there somewhere. Like that for me is how iconic Michael Jordan was and still is. I think he's the greatest player of all time. I mean, there's so many greats in the game, but for me, nobody could take everything on his shoulders at 6'6" with the speed, velocity, power, and finesse that Jordan did.
I think anyone who competed at sports at a high level, whether it be college or pro, whatever the sport is, I think took something away from Michael Jordan, especially someone from that era. Hey, Stacey, thank you so much for sharing your perspective and breaking down the NFL with us as well.
It's my pleasure. Love you guys both. And stay safe. Thanks for having me on. Really do appreciate you guys.
All right, take care. Stacey Dales from NFL Network sharing her basketball memories from the previous career as well as the football stuff, which she's so proficient at as well. Let's take a break, Mark. When we come back, we will be joined by an NFL draft expert as we look ahead to round one of the 2020 National Football League draft on Thursday. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Zach Zabin, Mark Rohde rolling on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, broadcasting from the Score Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. We're talking Bears and NFL draft, and joining us now on The Score is CBS Sports draft analyst Chris Trapasso, who joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Chris, good evening. Hello. Thank you so much for joining us. So I heard something that Jimmy Johnson said earlier this week, and I wanted to run it by you, because we all know that Joe Burrow is going to go first to Cincinnati. The belief is that Chase Young will go number two to Washington, and then the draft really starts with Detroit having that third pick. And he said, no matter the needs for Detroit, if they can't make a trade, he suggested the Lions take a quarterback regardless, because there will be value in that pick whether or not someone jumps up to then try to acquire Matthew Stafford or the quarterback that they end up taking, whether it would be Herbert or Tua. What do you think?
Well, I think he's on to something when it comes to just looking at positional value, that at number three overall, taking a quarterback there, that makes the most sense strictly from that perspective. But given Matthew Stafford's contract, they really can't cut him until after next season. I'm guessing they could work out some kind of a trade where they would eat some of the salary and a new team would take on some of the deal. But with Cam Newton still on the market, Andy Dalton presumably on the market, Jameis Winston, I don't think there would be a huge market for Matthew Stafford. I mean, he's a clear step above especially Jameis Winston and Andy Dalton. But I think what needs to happen for the Lions is they need to trade back. I don't think they necessarily need to take Tua or Justin Herbert just to plan for the future. And this is not looking at it strictly from a 2020 standpoint, but I think that Bob Quinn, their GM, and Matt Patricia, their head coach, probably feel like they're on the hot seat and they need an instant impact guy more so than looking ahead and trying to do some wheel and dealing after picking a quarterback at number three. So I get it from positional value, but I think the Lions should and ultimately will either go defender or trade out of that spot at number three.
Hey, Chris, there's a tight end prospect with whom I have been very intrigued. We actually had a texter ask about this guy earlier. He is Albert Okwuegbunam out of Missouri. He played his high school ball in Springfield, Illinois at Sacred Heart Griffin, 6'5", 258. Is this guy somebody who would be worth an early round pick on, as in second round, or is he a later round guy? Tell us about Okwuegbunam.
Yeah, he's more of a third or a fourth rounder to me, but I have heard some buzz that there are a small collection of teams that actually see him as the top tight end in this class, because at that size, and he's a bigger tight end, 6'5", around 260, he ran 4.48 at the combine. But the reason why, despite the size and the speed combination with Okwuegbunam, that I see him a little bit lower is because he's really fast in a straight line, explosive, but changing directions, creating separation, I don't really think that's where he excels. But there's not a lot of tight ends in this draft class that can win down the field. There's a lot of underneath guys that will be security blankets that don't really have the dynamic athleticism to be a true seam stretcher. And Okwuegbunam can be that type of tight end. He's a little bit of a one-trick pony. So we could see him at the back end of the second, or we may not see him until the fourth or the fifth round, because it is a little bit of a weaker tight end class. But he certainly opened up a lot of eyes and boosted his draft stock by running 4.48 at the combine.
Breaking down the NFL draft with CBS Sports draft analyst Chris Trapasso here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Why have we heard a lot of people chirping about Tua and downgrading him? And I'm not talking about the injury stuff. I mean, obviously, that's a huge question mark, and it depends on what each team's individual medical staff says to the person making the decision for each individual team. But why are people harping on his game? Since when was his game being questioned?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't think there's a ton of harping on his game, but what's out there that might be a little bit of a nitpick, a few things. One, the situation that he had at Alabama. We obviously know about the receivers. The offensive line in his 2 years as a starter for the Crimson Tide was unbelievable. They're going to, you know, going to be multiple first-rounders, second-rounders from that offensive line picked in the next couple of drafts. There was Jonah Williams last year. Jedrick Wills this year is going to go in the first round. So he was throwing to open wide receivers. He was not under pressure a ton. And then the fact that he doesn't have a huge arm and he likes to run around a little bit, but I don't think his athleticism is going to allow him to do that regularly in the NFL. And we saw him, you know, take a fair amount of hits, and he was injured on a play outside the pocket in the SEC, that he's probably a average to below average athlete for the quarterback spot. So because of those physical limitations, I think that's why we're starting to see a little bit about people not being as high on Tua. He's my number three overall prospect. I think he's a superb quarterback prospect. Do I think he's an extra breed? I don't know if I'll go that far. But yeah, anything about him as a passer that's being negative, I think is really just nitpicking as we're getting very close to the draft.
Let the quarterback here for a second, because one guy that I've been, you know, looking at a little bit more closely outside of the big name guys, and I guess some people would consider Jacob Eason to be a big name guy out of Washington, you know, 6'6", 231, pocket passer. When do you see him leaving the draft board, and which round and when?
I think he's going to go somewhere in the late second. Could go maybe even in the mid second round, just because he is so big, like you said. He's 6'6", and he has, I think he's going to be up there with Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen as having the strongest arm in the NFL. He'll be right up there with those guys. He's an absolute howitzer for an arm. And what's interesting about Jacob Eason is that despite having the big arm and being a pocket passer, usually those prospects, unless you're talking about a top five overall talent, they're usually not good with their accuracy. That they can throw fastballs, but they're not throwing a lot of strikes. But when you watch his film, you see him putting the ball in the bucket down the field, intermediate portions of the field, very good ball placement. The problem with Eason is that he's not great under pressure, that when there is an oncoming defender, he doesn't really know what to do. He doesn't really quickly find his hot read, and he's coming into the NFL like 5 or 10 years too late, that we're seeing so many of these quarterbacks that are able to run, improvise, create off script. That's really not his game. So 5 or 10 years ago, we'd be talking about him as a slam dunk first round pick, but I think more now he's a second rounder just because of the style of play at the quarterback position.
Chris, I want to bring it closer to home here when we talk about the Bears. And obviously it's round two. They don't have a first round pick because of the Khalil Mack trade. If they keep those two second rounders, we've been told, and I'm sure you agree with this, that if this isn't the deepest wide receiver draft that the NFL has had, it's among the deepest in the history of the league. Who's realistic for where the Bears are in the second round in terms of receivers that can make the kind of impact year one that we saw some of the players this past season in the NFL make, receivers that were picked in the second round?
Yeah, I'll start with a pretty big name, and I think it's very reasonable that he'll be available when the Bears go on the clock. T. Higgins from Clemson. I personally really like him. I have a first-round grade on him, but everyone I've spoken to said he's going to go in the second, and it might not be early second. It could be mid or later portions of round two because some people are worried about his speed. Can he get open consistently in the NFL? But I think that would be a perfect fit with the Bears, adding Nick Foles, that he was in Philadelphia with Alshon Jeffrey. He's very aggressive, throwing the football down the field, unafraid to make those throws to wide receivers when they're seemingly not open. And that's where T. Higgins excels, that you throw him back shoulder balls, just let him go up and get it, win on the vertical route tree. I think T. Higgins will certainly be there. Another big body, Michael Pittman from USC, not as dynamic as a rebounder on the outside, but a little bit better as a route runner, short to intermediate portions. But really, I mean, after we get out of probably the top 20, there's really, it's all over the map when it comes to where teams have like number 4 to number 8 or 9 at the wide receiver spot. So it's very hard to kind of peg down those wide receivers in this year's draft class. But when the Bears do go on the clock, there will be a handful of instant impact pass catchers on the board.
Do you think Notre Dame's Chase Claypool will be available at either 43 or 50 in the second round?
Yeah, I think, though, if they want to pick him, they should probably do so at 43. Being 6'4", 238, running 4.42, jumping over 40 inches, that type of athlete, especially from a marquee program like Notre Dame, does not last super long in any NFL draft. And the fact that he did all that, like I said, after bulking up to tight end type size, I think he's a really intriguing prospect that we've realized in the NFL today that it's going positionless, that linebackers and safeties are interchangeable, safeties and slot corners are playing or doing a lot of the same things on the field throughout a game. And I think we'll see more teams start to use running backs as slot receivers and tight ends as perimeter wide receivers. And the fact that Claypool has experience on the outside, but and the size and just crazy athleticism for the tight end spot, I think he would make a lot of sense, but the Bears would probably have to use that first second round pick to get him.
Our final few moments with CBS analyst Chris Trapasso here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Another major area of need for the Bears, one could say, would be safety, someone to play next to Eddie Jackson after Clinton Dix left for Dallas. They have a guy on the team right now by the name of Deion Bush, who's a Chuck Pagano favorite, but realistically, I think they probably need some more competition at that position. In round two, what's realistic at the safety position?
Yeah, I think that's really the sweet spot for the safety position. That I think Xavier McKinney from Alabama is the only safety that is locked into the first round. After that, and this is going on my evaluations and people that I've spoken to about where these players are going to land, that's where we could see a huge chunk of top-end talent go in round two. There's Jeremy Chinn and Kyle Duggar, the two small school kind of safety linebacker hybrids, extremely athletic. I think they can do anything you ask of them at the safety spot, but just will be a big jump in competition for them. Terrell Burgess from Utah is more of that slot corner safety hybrid. Antoine Winfield Jr., great as a free safety, but very hard hitting against the run, very willing, great tackler like his dad was. So there's four or five safeties that I think are maybe not huge names outside of Kyle Duggar and Jeremy Chinn that really rose up after the Senior Bowl, but can be really good players and not only just play strong safety or just play free safety, they can do multiple things on the back end of your defense, which is very vital in today's NFL.
Chris, when last we spoke, when we had you on The Score recently, you sold me on Michigan's Cesar Ruiz, the guard center, 6'3", 307. But since then, it feels like he probably won't be around for the Bears at 43 and 50. Who are some other possible guard interior offensive linemen that we should keep our eyes on? And maybe, do you think Ruiz will be available to the Bears in the second round?
I don't think he'll be there. I think Ruiz is going to be the only center to go in the first round. There's a few teams that need a center. He's young, he's powerful, athletic. After that, though, if we're talking about a guard, I think Damian Lewis from LSU, if you watch Joe Burrow, Justin Jefferson, that historic LSU offense, Damian Lewis was really a road grader on the inside, that he's not amazing in pass protection, but he's NFL strong right now. He can put NFL defensive linemen on their backs. He has that squatty frame, very powerful lower half, outstanding run blocker. I think he would work wonders for David Montgomery and the Bears running game off play action. And then one other player, center, and he might have some versatility, Matt Hennessy from Temple. Extreme athlete, can get out in front of those zone stretch plays, Very good balance. He almost has, to me, the feet of an offensive tackle. But he plays center, could play guard too. He's 6'4", a little bit over 300 pounds. So he has some positional versatility. He's actually one of my top offensive interior linemen just because of the athleticism, the balance at which he plays. He's a good run blocker, but he's awesome in pass protection. One of those two players in round two would make a lot of sense and would add to this already strong Bears offensive line.
Chris, appreciate the detailed breakdown. Thank you so much.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Chris Trapasso, the CBS Sports Draft Analyst, spending some time with us. Real detailed analysis heading into the 2020 NFL Draft. When we come back, I've got a question for the Bears sideline reporter about the Bears' starting quarterback, or at least the guy who will be the number one with the number ones when the Bears first take the field in whatever fashion in 2020. The bottom of the hour was brought to you by Northwestern Athletics. The Wildcats would like to thank all those working throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, including grocery store employees, restaurant staffs, and delivery drivers. We appreciate you. Questions for Mark next on The Score. Alongside Bears sideline reporter Mark Grody, Zach Zabin with you on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. So they've been replaying the 2017 NFL draft on TV tonight. And I think you know what happened. It did feature a Super Bowl winning quarterback in Patrick Mahomes, but he's not the guy the Bears ended up trading to the number two overall spot to get. They drafted Mitchell Trubisky. And I had a chance to work alongside Trubisky during his rookie season in the National Football League. And, you know, when you're a rookie, you're so focused in on taking everything in that's in the NFL that I don't think you get a true indication of what the guy is about. But we definitely did get an opportunity, at least you did, since moving over to the Bears side, Mark, to learn a little bit more about Mitchell Trubisky, because I don't think you learn about someone truly is until they experience negativity. And I bring that up because, you saw it in The Last Dance, the documentary. It's when bad things happen, are you able to rise above and get out of it and make things happen off of that? And to me, you know, we have not heard from Mitchell Trubisky since the trade for Nick Foles. We've heard what the Bears would like us to hear in terms of what they think Mitchell Trubisky is handling. And, you know, we heard that Matt Nagy said, and so did Ryan Pace, that, you know, Trubisky welcomes the competition. But no one gets to be around Trubisky immediately after good games or bad games more than you. Do you think he welcomes the competition that is on the team right now in Foles?
Well, I think he hates the fact that it's come down to this, the fact that there has to be competition, because obviously it means that he has not been as good as he was expected to be, and because of that there is competition. Now, to the question of whether or not he can handle competition, if Matt Nagy is being truthful when he says that he's looking forward to the actual competition, I think he probably is. I think he is. I mean, he does have that in him. We know the play has been spotty on the field, but I can tell you from my conversations on and off the air with him that he does have that competitive drive. One of the things about Trubisky is, and this is for better or for worse, is that his life is football. He is very one-dimensional. There's not a lot of other things that he would prefer to be talking about than football. And as you know, Zach, sometimes athletes would prefer to dodge things and talk about other things or talk about other players or whatever the case may be. But Trubisky is very, very much about football, football, football. We know that from the fact that it's been well publicized and written that he is, you know, the classic first guy in, last guy out of Hallis Hall. But, you know, that's an interesting part too, because that's what we've been hearing. That's what I've been seeing at Hallis Hall, but it's not been enough. At this point, what the Bears need out of him is quality over quantity, because the quantity has been there. He's put the classroom hours in, and now they want to see that translate on the field which it simply has not done so far. One thing that leads me to believe that Nick Foles probably has the edge going into this season is that Matt Nagy said several times recently that they're going to be very transparent during this competition, that they're going to be honest, that they're going to say things that these guys may not want to hear. And I feel like that message, that peripheral message from Matt Nagy, was directed at Mitchell Trubisky in case he is to be QB2 this year.
See, I think the thing that stands out to me is, and I don't think I'm saying anything controversial, I just think Nick Foles has a better understanding of the offense that the Bears run, has operated it more efficiently over the course of his career than Mitchell Trubisky has. And I think those two things are extremely difficult for Trubisky to overcome. And I would add that perhaps this offense isn't best suited to take advantage of the things Trubisky does the best. And that's something that kind of stood out to me last season. And I don't know if he was hurt more so, and I'm talking about the beginning of the season before the shoulder. I don't know if he was hurt, and that's why early on in the year, you know, when I say hurt, meaning he was banged up and healthy enough to play, but things that you don't necessarily have to tell the whole world because it impacts your ability to be as effective as you would like. I don't know what was going on, but I think when you've seen Trubisky at his best, he can be on the move. He buys himself extra time. He's using his legs to help him both throw the ball and just move the ball and create offense. And for whatever reason, we didn't see that nearly enough for him to be successful. So the question I come up with is, well, is that not part of what you do in this offense? That's when you look at Patrick Mahomes and you look at the way Carson Wentz, that they've run this offense, they run to buy extra time to throw. You didn't see Trubisky do a lot of that. And Nick Foles is not considered a runner, but we've seen him operate this offense at the highest possible level and win a championship doing it. So I don't know if the way Matt Nagy wants to run his team meshes with what Trubisky does best. I know it does with Nick Foles.
Right, and it's such a great point, Zach, because I was saying this year, in all the way back in Bourbonnais, one of the things that Matt Nagy said going into the 2019 season about Mitchell Trubisky, and he came out and said it publicly, we want Mitchell Trubisky to think throw first. We want pass first. As in, look, 2018 was great. We appreciated all the running, and it was really good, but we want you to be more of our system quarterback. We want you to use your playmakers more. And I get it. As a rough draft idea from Matt Nagy, that's a good idea. You want your quarterback to think throw first. But I believe that got in the head of Mitchell Trubisky, as in there were so many opportunities this year where, and we all saw it, where he would take a pass on running, whereas in 2018 he made some massive third down runs, whereas this year it almost felt like, whether it was, as you indicated, potential injury or favoring something, or the fact that it was just in his head that he had to throw first, so that translated into either him throwing the ball away or taking more sacks this year. Because it was, for me, it was so strange, especially early in the year when Trubisky would take sacks, because he never did that in 2018, where he would see a little bit of daylight on a third and short or whatever it was, and he would run the ball for the first down, and we just didn't see him do that a lot in 2019. One of the things that before we heard from Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace on the signing of Nick Foles, one of the ideas that I had was to have Trubisky give him the first three games of this season, say, Mitch, you got three games to get this right. If it looks anything like it did in 2019, we're pulling the plug and we're bringing in Nick Foles. And as you know, Zach, Nick Foles has proven throughout his career to be good to great at being a quarterback coming in off of the bench.
He has. But the thing that I look at is we don't know if this is going to be a season where you have 16 games. You may have less than that just based on the world that we're living in right now, and we don't have the answers. But we do know that you don't have a real off season, so that shrinks the time in which you can use to earn the trust of the coaching staff, which he doesn't have right now, and he's working essentially with new guys across the board with the exception of his head coach. And I think that is a big factor in things. The other thing that I look at is if you have a condensed time to get ready for a shortened regular season, well, now you go back to who knows this offense better. And it sounds weird saying that the new guy that you brought in knows the offense better than the guy who's been here with the head coach for the past couple of seasons. But it's clear Foles knows this offense better than Trubisky and has operated it better than Trubisky. And I think ultimately, if it's about winning now, and I think you came away from the Ryan Pace pre-draft presser with the attitude that, you know what, the Bears are all, they're looking to win right now. You cannot squander another year of the defense that you've assembled. You better have a quarterback that you can trust. And when it comes time to trusting a quarterback, if you're Matt Nagy, you're going to trust the veteran over the younger guy in Trubisky. That's just my opinion, but I think ultimately that's how it plays out. And that puts a lot of extra pressure on Trubisky to basically be perfect. You cannot make a mistake because you feel like you're going to get pulled if that happens.
I completely agree with you. I do think Foles has the edge. If it is Trubisky, though, Zach, and this is another thing that we haven't really talked about, you know, Matt Nagy, I asked Matt Nagy at the Combine, are you willing to change your playbook, to change your offense, to maybe better suit your quarterback or even the talent that exists on your offense? And he said, absolutely, yes. And if it is to be Mitch Trubisky, that's what they would have to do, that they would have to, and they did a lot last year. I mean, they did tear out chunks of the playbook in the second half of last year. But if it is Trubisky, he has to tone down the offense, or not necessarily tone it down, but change it drastically to suit what Trubisky does best.
And to be fair, I would like to think that heading into this season, they don't have to run as many gimmicky plays because they will have a tight end, a better offensive line, a running game that they trust, and hopefully more receivers than just Allen Robinson out there on the field. Hey, Mark, it's been a pleasure. Got a lot of people to thank for this extravaganza. We'll start first with our executive producer, Chris Dickens, who made us blast through the speakers of your radio. Want to thank Kevin Fishbane of The Athletic, the former Bears, Jay Hilgenberg and Jim Schwantz. Want to thank Chuck Swirsky, the voice of the Bulls, NFL Network Stacey Dales, and CBS Sports Draft Analyst Chris Trapasso. Enjoy the draft. You're going to be busy this week, my friend.
Yep, big night starting on Thursday. So we'll have coverage Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, Zach. It's been fun, man.
For Mark Rohde, I'm Zach Zaveman. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
And that's the bottom line. Cause Stone Cold Simpson.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.